Okay, so why don't we start this informal workshop, kind of roll-up-the-sleeves sort of session, by giving you a bit of background for a couple projects we've undertaken here that are meant in the Mark Twain spirit of everybody's always talking about the weather, but nobody ever does anything about it. And we thought we might try to do something about the weather. There are other projects out there in the world doing it, and we're going to be looking to connect with them or share with them as appropriate, and some of you may even know of links that you'll want to tell us about, which is great. Let me give you a little bit first, just quickly, of a theoretical kind of background to this. In working on my own book, I spent a whole chapter, probably the most anxious chapter of the book, not anxious to write, but anxious as a chapter, about so-called perfect enforcement, worried that the kinds of devices and technologies, including cloud computing technologies that we're evolving to, will make it much easier for us to be regulated over the formerly famously anarchic internet. And one of my worries about perfect enforcement is that it's just easy for lazy regulators to do what they want without having to make much effort about it. And one of those examples is that the FBI now, instead of having to get sweat stains under their armpits and sit in an oddly camouflaged roses van or something outside somebody's house with alligator clips, now could just ask the people who do an OnStar-like system for your car to remotely upgrade the software to make it so it turns on the microphone in the car and that they just listen to everything going on inside for the people of interest for that vehicle. This has actually happened in America by the FBI. And perhaps the law and order types among us are like, woohoo! So chapter 5 tells you why you should be unsettled about this, if you're not already. And one of the reasons I think we should be unsettled is that the technology is too easily used without needing cooperation and buy-in from a lot of people to make it happen. And there's actually a great paper that someone else has written about the Posse Comitatus Act back in the mid-19th century. And when fugitive slaves would make their way to the North, part of the deal was basically they'd have to be returned to the South. And that was the law even in the North. And yet, it was really hard for the sheriff to kind of get that community spirit going in the North, to have an old-fashioned posse to return somebody to the South. It just ended up being dead letter because there wasn't that enforcement. If there were some button you could press to make it happen, that might well have been a very different matrix of enforcement. So anyway, that's a worry about technologies that make it too easy to do what you want to do as a regulator. This session now is kind of about the converse, or maybe it's the inverse, I forget my propositional logic, but it's the idea that maybe we can develop some technologies whose very success will be premised on the amount of buy-in from people willing to vote with their bandwidth and their cycles that they support the idea behind the technology. We've seen a couple examples of that. SETI at home is not a bad example. In exchange for a pretty screensaver that looks scientific but you have no idea what the charts mean, you can have the screensaver operate on your machine. It crunches some numbers about coming in from radio telescopes. It's looking for extraterrestrial intelligence. And with this early grid computing initiative, we might be able to reenact the movie Contact without the scary man that tries to kill Jodie Foster. And we see it with our colleague Ron Diebert's Siphon initiative, which pairs up people one pair at a time, somebody, say, outside of China with somebody in China, and that person can use the first person's internet connection to see the world the way a Canadian sees it, which turns out to be broader, technologically speaking, than the way somebody in China can see it. And the success of Siphon will depend, among many factors, but one of them will be how many people in one zone are ready to share with one other person their connection as they see it with those and others. So generally, I'm interested in those technologies, and I want to see them applied to some of the problems that we've taken up in different angles, many of the ones discussed today, and that have really represented what the Berkman Center has been doing for the past 10 years, problems that include the problem of viruses, malware, and kind of executables run amok on machines that are ready to run any executable, because that's how the hobbyists wanted it in 1977. I'm hoping that there might be ways that experts and non-experts alike can contribute some bandwidth and cycles to easing that problem, to buy us a little more time on the PC. And secondly, I'm interested in our filtering project, the generous support of MacArthur Foundation and others. We've been able to track internet filtering around the world. The model, and I only slightly caricature it here, aside from placing some long-distance telephone calls from Griswold Hall to Chinese ISPs and then asking for 200,000 websites and measuring which ones we could get to and which ones we couldn't, which worked until the bill came in, we have also been sending people around the world to plug in, run a bunch of tests, and leave a country before they can get arrested. And we are interested in more broad-based ways of gathering that data and doing this enterprise, not only because we'd like it to be more self-sustaining, but because we think the kind of data we can gather if people are able to help us out and, as they are naturally surfing, indicate where they can and can't get to, that we actually think that will give us a much better and more up-to-date picture of what is filtered and blocked around the world than us having to guess ahead of time what sites are likely to be sensitive, explicitly test them in one fell swoop, and then say, okay, we've got our 2008 results. We'll see you next year in 2009 with results. So to that end, we've developed a cluster of technologies under the rubric of, you know, netizenship, trying to relate to this technology, not just as a consumer where you pay your money and you expect it to work, and if it doesn't, you call an 800 number, but seeing it as something in which you can participate, in which there's a standing invitation to devote your machine and yourself to various tasks. And I think our instinct is there's a lot of slack out there. There's a lot of solitaire hours right now being spent, that it doesn't take much to push some of the more obsessive compulsive solitaire players into fixing typos on Wikipedia, like that becomes their thing, or into going to Mechanical Turk and for a penny a picture circling the beer can in each picture. Like that's a Mechanical Turk thing you can do. Maybe some of you are doing it right now. Anyway, we are hoping to buy into a little bit of that, have a value proposition that's not just contributing to understanding filtering around the world or health, but giving you back a little data as you go, and working with a number of people, and I'll ask them to introduce themselves as they kind of come online here. We are working to develop some pilot technologies to test out just what we could do if there were people willing to pitch in. So one example of this, and maybe we should switch over, and Vandana, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure.
We might need a microphone for you, I don't know. Why, here's a microphone.
Hi, my name is Vandana Aneja. I work at the Berkman Center. I'm trying to bring into delivery Jay-Z's vision for this fabulous suite of applications that will enable us to achieve this goal.
Should I pass it on to the team?
Sure.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Stark. I'm a recent grad of HLS, and I'm working together with the Berkman Center on Herdict.
Yeah, the name, by the way, Herdict, Verdicts from the Herd, worst name ever.
So suggestions.
One possible outcome of this workshop would be if you've got other, maybe on the question tool, we start a thread with like alternative names, and then, you know, half of them will be snarky and half of them will be interesting, and
you know, they
some
say
of them will be both.
Verdatum,
for example, probably already trademarked by someone as clever as you, but Verdatum, I like it.
They say that when you don't have a lot of money to put towards branding, that you shouldn't make up words.
Who's that they of which you speak? I call those non-sayers. Yeah, well, I know, but I was making up a word. That was part of the multi-layered joke. Sorry. Yes.
I'm Sally, and I work at the Berkman Center.
Hi, I'm Mia, and I'm the one who tries to make it visual, and I've bought into the herd thing, so big time, grass.
Now. Excellent.
Hi, and my name's Jeff Litt, and I'm trying to make it work.
Hi, I'm Rob, I'm one of the sheep. I'm kind of the one that's in the middle of the herd, not in the front, not in the back, not in the left, not in the right.
On messaging, my vision for this is like, the sheep finally like get wise. It's like the end of that Pink Floyd album. And I have this vision that Mia resists implementing in design of a sheep that's finally up on its hind legs, looking like it's about to make trouble. And at some point somebody will point out that sheep come in flocks, not herds, but I refuse to call it flock-dict. So All right, so we have two ideas to just kind of present to you. These are still in very early phases, kind of alpha. They're about to go into higher gear, but this is a really opportune time for people to react however they feel moved about what they think, including, believe me, I've heard lots of reactions to this. This isn't like we just fell off the turnip truck. I perfectly welcome it, even from people who really know what they're talking about when they tell us that this is the worst idea ever and it's just not going to fly. Feel free. We'll hear it and we'll talk it through. So these are some mock-ups. They're totally just mock-ups, a possible artist's conception, with the artist here, it should be noted, of a way it might work. I just saw these for the first time about 2 hours ago, so they're hot off the digital press. But we just thought it would be nice to have some visuals to give you as concrete an idea as possible about what we're thinking. So for example, the highly assonant name Herdict for Network Health. There's a little bit of politicking going on, because if we call it, if we use filtering or censorship or blocking, it already paints us out to be threats to the regimes involved. And as JP has already asked on the question tool, we want to hold off as long as we can the moment where the system starts getting gamed or blocked. Although, frankly, my view is the moment that either the PC Health or Network Health application starts getting false data because it was worth somebody's while to spoof our own clients and give us false data is the first milestone of its success. When Wikipedia first started getting vandalized, it was like, yes, we've happened. Now we have to solve the vandalism, but first, you know, props to us for being worth subverting. You want to get to the point where you're worth subverting. So this is a first cut at what might be a landing page for the Network Health application. And the basic idea is to give you kind of a map of the world and a sense of what's coming in as it happens. So you're idle, you've got 10 minutes, you've already reloaded Drudge 5 times, nothing's going on in the world. What else should I do? Well, I just check over here on Network Health and see what's being reported around the world by people who have installed a plugin that we'll talk about in a second as being blocked. So a second has passed. You have Firefox, you can install a plugin from us, branded either with the Herdic brand or Berkman or whatever it might be. And you can, when you can't get to a website, and it's in your judgment that you can't, there's not some automatic detection thing that's trying to figure out whether you just got to the website you asked for, there's actually just a little button in the bottom right corner that is the I can't get there from here WTF button. So you press the WTF button, and the idea is that the act of asking that question fires off the fact that you just tried to get somewhere, you being anonymized, but not anonymized as in location, because we know something crudely about the network topology and where it seems as if you're coming from by your IP address. And you say you can't get there, and we can aggregate these raw reports as they come in and start to get a sense, for example, that there's a lot of reports coming in from Thailand say that they can't see this video on YouTube, and others are reporting that they can see the video. Now, why would you bother to say WTF if you can see the video? Maybe you wouldn't. But as these reports come in, this is just a website for which you don't need the plugin, and essentially a subset of this website will be, I think of it as, am I blocked or not? Some of you may have heard of variants of this. I'm not asking if anybody has. But am I blocked or not actually lets you, and I don't know if we have a mock-up of that, it lets you go one website at a time. I think we do. Pretty sure we do.
Well, maybe like 2 or 3 screens up.
Yeah. It might be 2 or 3 screens up, but feel free to just find it. You can see the reports as they come in of sites that people are saying are blocked, and you get a few statistics. Yeah, this would be it, actually. So here's a site where it's like, all right, at the bottom of the screen, it asks your browser to load in the site. So if you are not able to see it, you'll get some message that doesn't appear to be what you're asking for. If you do see it, then you see it. And now you can say either site is accessible, site is inaccessible. And it has this lovely binary OCD thing where you could just sit there and drool and go accessible, inaccessible, accessible, inaccessible, and in the meantime, learn about sites that other people are reporting as inaccessible and actually come to understand censorship of the net in a way that just reading access denied, as lovely as we know it is, as co-authors we speak, it really brings it home. Wow, the page I'm looking at down there There are people who at this instant are trying to see it, and they can't. And one worry we had, by the way, was that a number of the sites reported as blocked will be pornographic, because a number of sites blocked are pornographic. We would hate if our site became the well-known portal for banned in Boston pornographic material. This is a puzzle. So our working solution to that is that we will pipe all of the URLs reported through Google Safe Search. And if Google Safe Search says they ain't so safe, we won't at least put it on the main pages as the stuff is coming in. And our academic justification is for that. This just in, they're blocking porn in China. It has a kind of John Brown still dead quality. It's like, you know, the annals of humankind's knowledge are not expanded greatly by that. But we want to focus on the sites that tend to have political, social, other sensitivity. And maybe we still have a version that says, you really want to see everything? Great, you know, fill in your birthday and now you can see everything. We'll be as good as MySpace about protecting minors from porn. Right, John?
Absolutely.
All right, John, head of the task force, charged with helping MySpace get out of the hot water it has placed itself in and turned to a boil over the past 3 years. Okay, so this then will give you some data up at the top that shows you where it's being reported as inaccessible, how many times, you can get a more detailed report, a chance to actually build some comments around the particular site being reported, and then on to the next site. And our thought here is that we could slice and dice the data as it comes in any number of ways. So it could just be, I want hot off the press the sites most recently reported. It might be just give me the sites for a given region, or there'll be a way to loosely, is David Weinberger still here? He's not anymore. It's too bad. I'm going to use the word folksonomy, and I just wanted to give props to David Weinberger. So everything is miscellaneous. We could start asking people to tag something about the content of the site. So this is a women's health site. This is an encyclopedia education site. Those kind of loose tags. So then people could come to the site and say, I'm just interested in the education sites that have been reported as blocked, or education sites in Saudi Arabia, for that matter. And you start to have the herd again developing and fleshing out this database of stuff as you go. So let me ask everybody, is there stuff I'm missing on explaining Herdict for Network Health, the basic concept, or does this pretty much cover it? Should we ask the question tool how we're doing? Seriously, we need a new name? Wow. Okay, we're going to keep working on the name. And at some point, perhaps we'll have to see this hilarious video of a cow taking charge of the herd and getting back in the van, but not now. Yeah, so, yes?
Do you expect all of the functions that this could have fully built out?
John asks if we've described all the functions this could have built out. And I appreciate your softball question, and I answer it by saying, you're right. There's so much more that you could do with this when it were fully built out. If we only had the financial support and resources, I said resources is the euphemism, right? If we had the resources to really fully flesh this out and, you know, provide Mia and Jeff and others with the additions they need to their houses. And my answer on that is why, yes, there are some people at this conference, perhaps even in this room or in this row, interested in network neutrality issues. And our thought is that you realize that loaded is an ambiguous word. our thought is, and this is a thought that really has, people just read Malcolm Gladwell's article, a lot of independent invention out there of this idea. Wouldn't it be neat if we could actually get some flavor of how good our network connection is related to others similarly situated, whatever that means, even on a site-by-site basis? Right now, there's no way to do it. So Barbara Van Shevik and Brett Frischman and others have pointed out that even when you get competition, even when you get competition in the provision of broadband, it's awfully hard for consumers to be like, I've had it with Comcast, you know, because my connection isn't going as fast as the next door neighbor I don't know who's using Verizon Fios or whatever they call it these days. And so yes, there are hopes that we could start capturing some network metrics that would start giving you an early warning system, a tripwire, if internet service providers, among others, start playing with how quickly or completely you can get to a website. We have punted that down the road a little bit because it's much harder to do. There's a lot of technical problems, and the users, the whole point is they don't know what they don't know. I think they're not insoluble problems, but here, to me, part of the beauty of phase one is that the user's judgment is at the fore as to whether they're getting to the site that they want. Now, sometimes their users will be wrong. They'll think that the video was yanked when, in fact, it, you know, is there and they just didn't notice it or whatever. I mean, we shouldn't underestimate that. But numbers might well cure that, as could the comment system. And the fact that when you say, I can't get there, enough of the header and other data will be sent back to the mothership, again, anonymized, so that later the researchers at OpenNet who are doing the gold standard to make a declaration as solemn as BBC is filtered in China will have the data they need to not just have to trust the user judgment. Are there other thoughts, comments, reactions on network health stuff? And just feel free to tell us who you are.
My name is Stephanie Willich, and I work with the Principles Project at Berkman. And this sounds like a very good project for the companies involved in the Principles Project to fund.
Yes, well, shall we line up commitments in the room?
Or yes.
It would be nice if the companies involved in Principles Project would fund it. For the Principles Project is P-L-E-S, not P-A-L-S, but it's the project that tries to help flesh out in an industry self-regulatory, self-congratulatory kind of way. These are the limits we might want to reserve when deploying and servicing technology in countries that don't fully recognize the rule of law, which is, say, like China, Saudi Arabia, others. And it might be nice to ask them to help contribute to something like this as part of their indulgence, if I may use the euphemism, for whatever they might be doing. There's some trickiness to it, too, because we don't want to end up with a quid pro quo for, all right, we're helping you academically, maybe you should now give us some money that's related to, you know, but I agree that can't hurt to think about this. Yeah. Other questions? We'll just keep the mic going around and then just pass it back to the next nearby
hand. I'm Jeff Goodell. I'm a fellow at the Berkman Center. So it would seem to me that users might really want to install this if it could make some judgments about how well its network is providing service to the customer. For example, if I can determine whether I'm getting a neutral network or not, are there any visions for active testing in the network or actually making connections?
I would put that in JP's category of wish list. There's other trickiness to that because if at our behest, rather than the user's behest, the client side is making requests for websites, we run into first the worry that we'll be accused of orchestrating a distributed denial of service attack because suddenly we're asking all the websites as a benchmark to test out nytimes.com. Suddenly all these people, unbeknownst to themselves, have their browsers asking for nytimes.com. And of course you also get into, you know this so well, Jeff, the privacy policy issues. And also, thirdly, for filtered sites, I mean, one thought that might have occurred to you as we were talking about this was, instead of waiting for people to come to Am I Blocked or Not and add their voice to whether they can see a site that has been preliminarily reported as blocked by somebody using the plugin in Firefox, why not just have, when a report comes in, send it out to 10 other people, perhaps even in that zone as dictated by network topology, and have the test automatically run by the browser? The problem there is we don't want to get in a position where perfectly innocuous people who've downloaded the plugin find themselves asking for falundafaismyhero.org, and you know it's just because the browser did it, and then when the secret police come, it's like, the browser did it. You know, that's harder to do. And we even see it come up a couple times in the US when the way links sometimes pre-cache, so your own browser will look ahead to what you might click on and load it ahead of time, which is how it can be very fast. So there's a link that you're like, the last thing I would do is click on that link, and I'm sorry, Sergeant, your men are already dead. So that's the kind of worry that we have to just deal with. It's not insurmountable, but this again seems easier because the only sites that the browser asks for are the sites that the user in his or her experience surfing the net is asking for. But otherwise, I would still put it ahead as something we'd want to develop in the future. Great. Just feel free to pass to another hand up or reaction.
Hi, I have what I hope is a dumb question.
And feel free to tell us who you are before you ask what you think is a dumb question.
I'm Sandra Russell, and I'm from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. How do you keep this site from itself getting blocked?
We're not sure we do. I reincorporate by reference my answer to JP of we would consider it maybe not an honor, but a mark of success at the point that some censor finds it worthy of blocking. The other thing is that with just a snip, we could make this thing into a circumvention technology. You could easily have this screen be divided into two further quadrants. On the left is what your browser is asking for. On the right is what the person reporting saw, or what some other person who said it was all green saw, and now you can get to the site by going to our site. We're not wanting to put in that functionality as a way of sticking to the realm of simply documenting and reporting rather than of circumvention. And to my surprise, for example, when we were trying to, in 2002, document filtering in Saudi Arabia, where everything is run through a central server farm and they just run American software to do the filtering, before we started probing and trying to figure out open proxies to find out how, without a flight to Saudi Arabia, we could do the testing, my thought was, well, why don't we just ask them if they wouldn't mind, first, giving us a list of what they filter, and second, would you just open up a proxy so we could do some tests? And to my shock, they refused to give us the list, but they were like, yeah, you have 2 weeks. We're like, great, we have 2 weeks. So we took 2 weeks and ran a bunch of tests, and from what we can tell, we really were on the Saudi net, thanks to the cooperation of the sensors. And we sent them a huge thank you, basket of flowers kind of thing after our report came out, and they never wrote back. But
they never let us back on the network.
They never let us back on the network. Well, they haven't written back generally to, you know, anything, really. They haven't even accepted my friend request on Facebook.
We did basically ask all 60 countries for studying.
That's true. John points out that we asked all 60 countries that were studying for filtering, and it was sort of in the spirit of the Saudi request. We were like, let's just ask them. So we came up with this really long questionnaire that was like, under the Paperwork Reduction Act, this will take 3 hours to fill out. And we sent it, and it turns out that like the cultural attachés at foreign ministries worldwide have nothing to do. They're playing solitaire, and they're like, oh, a questionnaire from Harvard. And so then they're just like, we are pleased by your deadline. They all got it under the wire. We gave them a deadline. It's like, they're so pleased to have gotten you their answers. You know, it's, I hope it's okay. It's GMT, not, yeah.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, she forgot what day she set as a deadline. Thanks, Sally. And then it all comes rushing in at the last minute with all the countries reporting in. So it's amazing what you can get just by asking. Or as Yogi Berra said, it's amazing what you can observe just by watching. So that's a long way of saying that we'll try it out and see if we get blocked. We're not anticipating, we're not building up towards a huge cat and mouse game if we have a super secret protocol that makes it look like it's merely BitTorrent. But rather, it's a web page. You visit it, and we'll see what happens. Other comments, reactions, thoughts to this? At some point, I guess...
So you've got a little thing going to Docky about safe search, which might be...
Very interesting, the safe search idea. Well, work is having two levels of censorship. Good censorship, evil, messy form, which isn't highlighted, and bad censorship, politics.
And who's to decide?
Well, in this case, because I think we'll have some checkbox where you can look at everything being reported, I don't feel like we're in the paradox of the International Broadcast Bureau when, at the behest, when they decided, this is the U.S. government now, that they were going to help Iranians circumvent the filtering regime. They then, after setting it up with anonymizer, decided they had to filter out porn from the circumventor, so it wasn't the U.S. government helping Iranians get the porn. And they did that by filtering out words in the URL, so like ASS was a stop word, which blocked usembassy.state.gov from the Iranian. Yeah. So,
awkwardly, they were paying for the project.
Awkward. The whole thing was, yes, awkward. As we found that, that's another person that doesn't return our emails. But we digress. All of this is to say, it's an awkward solution, but I just thought it would be weird if we got this whole, like, the sheep are standing up and they're all naked. Like, it's just like... I don't know. It was a crude solution to head off at the vague first level problem. But Dahi, I don't know if you have thoughts on this. You're actually here. Tell us more about what you think.
Hey, the reason I was putting up the question there, I think there are some good points that come out about whether you actually use the herd itself to try and form a verdict on the type of setting.
Is this the kind of thing the herd shouldn't see? Let's ask
the
herd.
It puts a certain trust in the system there, but it could be used.
It would really be back to, am I hot or not? Like, yep, it's hot. We won't be showing that anymore.
Is this porn or not? The serious underlying point.
It would certainly get us traffic.
Well, it may not be the kind of traffic you're looking for, but you know, the question there really is, when you're looking at censorship, I think, especially when you're dealing at an international level and when you have, say, some of the big controversial issues that we're blocking that are divided by nations, something like hate speech, then you have an opportunity potentially to use the system to try and get an understanding of not just is something blocked or not, but what kind of blocking, the sort of material that you had from ONI, looking at some countries were more likely to block things for religious reasons.
Well, exactly, and that's our folksonomy idea too, that people really will be tagging the sites. And my understanding, I could be wrong about Safe Search, but my understanding about Safe Search is, one, it's pretty crappy.
Yeah.
It's like the engineers get up at the crack of noon just to make sure the chores aren't being done kind of service. But second, it really does just focus on porn. It's not looking at any other hot button thing. Now maybe again, that reflects some ethnocentrism that's the one thing we're gonna make special provision for. But my guess is for the socially sensitive sites, including in the West, which includes hate sites, incitement sites, jihadist sites, all of those would get reported if they are blocked. Now, in Germany and France, I think, and we have the brain trust in the room to gainsay me if I'm wrong, we don't see a whole lot of blocking of those sites. We might see them falling out of the Google index or something, but I don't think we see the local ISPs blocking them. Then again, this is a great way to find out. I mean, I don't know how thorough our own testing has managed to be on that front. I'm looking to see if Rob wants to tell me I'm full of it.
No, you're right. You're right. I just found something a little bit on the awkward side, which is I was looking for an empirical analysis of Google Safe Search, and I found one done in 2002 by Professor Jonathan Zittrain.
Yeah, well. Those were the days. It's often, I think it's time for the second platinum edition of that. Yes. You loved the first. Now here's the worst.
My name is Kathleen Ring. I'm with Internews, and I work a little bit in, our organisation works a little bit in this area as well, and I collaborated with Rob and others on a joint project. I have a question about language localisation and the involvement of those who are truly affected by this reporting on their own. I think it's great that Americans could get involved in this and native English language speakers assisting those abroad, but what about going to the heart of the problem and letting them help themselves?
Yes. Well, we do not intend this to be like, come on, Americans, let's all say that we can get everywhere. Like, you're absolutely right that we want this very site to be available in lots of different languages, skinned so that particularly the prompts and such can all be in local languages. For the Firefox plugin, we think this will be pretty easy because the only functionality we need in the plugin is the button, basically. And our hope, just kind of like the advanced Google toolbar tools that will give you a link karma as you surf to every site, which is why the privacy policy for that says it's not the usual yada yada, because in order to give you the karma, you have to send to Google every single site you visit as you visit it so that Google can in turn give you the rating. Similarly, we might be prepared to do kind of a red, yellow, green indicator that as you surf to each site, you'll just be able to see if it's being reported in significant numbers recently around the world as having been filtered. And that's kind of a neat thing just to have running in the background, and you'll just notice when something goes red, huh, who knew that WSJ.com would be filtered that way. Our own view on this site is that we would love to localize it to the languages of peoples most likely and that we have actually detected to be covered by censorship. When we mentioned that to Mia on Wednesday, was it?
Yeah.
She had a litter of kittens and said it's a great idea, but for demo purposes, it's kind of like one of those movies where all of the Russian spies still speak English, but in a heavy Russian accent. Just imagine this in the language of the choice of the people you like. But yes, we completely agree. We can see if the other reactions. Another question maybe to put out there before we turn over and do the same kind of analysis for our PC Health app is just, I'd love to take the temperature and see if the app, as you've more or less understood it, and of course it's still embryonic, but as you've more or less understood it described here, were available for you to download and put on your machine, I am curious how many people would be, how eager or how anathema to them would it be to run this kind of thing. I mean, this is a really interesting self-selected, you know, digerati kind of group. If anybody has a view on that, I don't know if we want to really call for a hum or a vote or something.
Solitaire.
You'd rather do solitaire?
No, it's new solitaire.
It's new solitaire. Maybe that's the new, good news solitaire. Yes, there you go. Let me just call for a hum real quick. So at the count of three, I'm going to ask you to hum. If this is the kind of thing for which in your idle moment, where you've just finished the email you're working on right now, you would go and download and get it up and running in your Firefox toolbar. 1, 2, 3. All right, that's pretty good. How many would be reluctant or uninterested for one reason or another? 1, 2, 3. So, Dave Eisenberg. Why are you raining on our parade today?
I'm just hesitant to put in new software and less, you know, I'm just concerned.
Your general paranoia. No, the man is loaded and paranoid.
No, I think it's generally a good idea. I just would hesitate to do it until I, you know, until you join the Berkman faculty.
Yeah. Awkward.
And yet,
or something.
Other reluctances not involving that issue. Elizabeth.
I just wanted to make a quick point that I personally would be very apt to run this, but I may be accessing the net from somewhere where there isn't filtering occurring. So I wonder how we can address the issue of having willing volunteers in a place where they may not necessarily be able to detect the filtering that's going on.
Absolutely agreed. And in fact, SETI at home ran into this problem, and it turns out so far there is no intelligent life out there. They actually had so much uptake in the screensaver that they ran out of data. And in a move that became scandalous, they sent leftover reheated data to people to crunch so there'd still be graphs to make. And when people heard that they were looking at stuff that had already been processed, just the thought of those electrons wastefully having to course through their machine again, it was a scandal. And so I guess I would say for you, maybe am I blocked or not would be of interest, because part of the point of this project would be a consciousness, awareness raising to understand at a much more intimate level what filtering means around the world. But otherwise, you're right. This gets back to the localization point. Our real target audiences will be in places where filtering is happening rather than places where it isn't until we pivot to the network neutrality phase of things, at which point we're interested in everybody doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or there may be other things to do, such as tagging or categorizing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, no. Tagging and categorizing in all your free time, absolutely. Sure beats solitaire. Yes, sir.
I have some function questions. Would there be trace route available on this so that if Joe Blow and wherever stand says, I can't get to X site, in some places there's preemptive redirect done by either the ISP or the government or some player. And so the trace route as to why that person in that location can't get there carries more information and I think is more helpful and would open up some information.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think, and I'll in a second turn it over to Jeffrey to tell us what the actual answer is. But my sense is that in implementing a browser plugin, you're sort of stuck in the browser sandbox, nice security feature. So harder to kind of do a trace route, but not impossible.
Would there be an API, like a central API?
Yeah, there might well be, and I would aspire to that. And also suggest, too, notice that the first implementation is all about web blocking rather than about internet blocking. If Skype is being blocked somewhere, this in this iteration won't pick it up. Ideally, we'd like to know, my Skype doesn't work, what's going on? Jeffrey, have I described it properly?
Yeah, we're just looking up right now the source IP.
You can leave the mic.
We're just looking up the source IP as seen by the website, essentially, and mapping that against ISPs or countries.
Yeah. So I know we're short on time. Maybe what we should do is give you a quick glimpse of the parallel site for PC Health and get some reactions to that. So just a couple mock-ups to help flesh out the concept here. Here the idea is not to operate through a plugin in something like Firefox, but instead to have you download a service that will run on your Windows machine. This is Windows specific now, because that turns out to be where most of the flies gather. And the service will give you a little system tray icon as well, so something more to clutter up your system tray bottom right corner of your machine area. And it will basically take the vital signs of your machine at a certain interval. Every so often it's just like snapshot of the vitals of the machine. And exactly what those vital signs are has been a subject of a lot of discussion, because we're not exactly sure what signs, such as how much free space do you have on the hard drive, is the hard drive thrashing a lot, is it crashing the machine, are there lots of pop-up windows over a certain interval. You can come up with pretty easily gathered neutral heuristics and data points that let you then make judgments, possibly, about how happy the machine is. And one data point might be occasionally allowing the person to declare to the service, I'm not very happy right now. Something bad just happened on that machine. And then you can actually filter out people who turn out to be preternaturally cranky and say, all right, well, they're cranky all the time. But people who are like, well, happy, 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 not so happy. And when you first install this, you go through a little runway that asks you some basic demographic questions, such as, are you an expert or a non-expert? There's no shame in being a non-expert. Just let us know one way or the other. And then when you do it, with that installed and reporting back data to the rest of the herd, again, anonymized, as you are a participant in the herd, you can start asking questions and see answers like this. So what's the happiness index of the installed boxes that are running herding? And let's break it out, not just the entire herd, but among the managed machines, machines that have been declared to be under the care and feeding of some corporate IT department, for example, versus unmanaged machines that are in homes and the hands of eight-year-olds, you know, around the world. And we might, one hypothesis is, see that the machines that are unmanaged may be running more interesting code, but also less happy. Maybe. It wouldn't be interesting if it turns out they're more happy. What would that tell us? Maybe we would get to know what the most popular executables are running on the machine pound for pound, whether we measure it as the entire herd, or what's the most popular app among the non-experts, or what's hot in Europe right now, kind of Nielsen ratings for applications, including a, you know, most changed, most improved over time. So it's like, once again, it turns out that servicehost.exe is really popular kind of thing. You know, we are now looking for deltas, for interesting blips in vital signs that indicate a change in our information technology environment. Something that in my experience, I'm about to be flame bait here, the network engineers are not that interested in, because their work stops at the edge of the network. The endpoint is not their business. That's the beauty of modular end-to-end networking. But now the network, in my view, in very important conceptual ways, comprises its endpoints as well. And starting to get a flavor for what's going on in those endpoints in a meaningful way is basically the point of this project. I want to be able to ask the herd, right before I run a piece of software, when was the first time this was spotted by the herd? Is it 10 years old, or is it just from last Tuesday? How many non-experts have chosen to run it versus experts? And we'll get interesting stuff out of it, I'm pretty convinced. It may turn out that around April 15th, computers running TurboTax have very unhappy users. And it's not because TurboTax is bad, it's just because they're in a really bad mood because they're about to pay their taxes. Those are the kinds of things that would be really interesting to ferret out and figure out how to adjust for. Are there thoughts on this PC health side of things?
When are you going to do Mac?
Jenny asks when we're going to do Mac. I have no, what are we going to do, your Mac in particular. I have no earthly idea. It would be very interesting to do it. It just, you know, all of those benchmarks are so much more difficult. Even within a PC architecture, it's awfully hard to figure out common benchmarks. But our thought was, for the moment, for reasons that are the subject of a religious war, Macs don't appear to be under the same kind of pressures that the standard PC is. So this is kind of where all the trout are gathered. Let's fish there, has been the rationale. Yeah?
Can you talk a bit about the connection between gathering this data and identifying malware, potentially?
Well, gathering this data and identifying malware, sure. I mean, in our self-serving, completely Potemkin chart here, we show that the Zlog Trojan is going way up, and wow, that's data you can use. So we do think that maybe, if there's bad executables out there making computers and people behind them unhappy, that might be, this might be a way of alerting people without having to, just thinking from yesterday's conversation, immediately farm out to Norton or McAfee or the government, please solve this problem for me. Instead, you actually see it as a neighborhood in which you are a participant, you're a netizen, and trying to see what other people have had to say about it, subject to all the problems of gamings and such that could be a token of this thing's success. On the malware front, I'm less interested in replacing Norton Antivirus and McAfee and such. I think hardcore, we know it when we see it, this is just a worm exploiting some flaw in an operating system. I don't mind having the Patriot anti-missile battery installed in some antivirus thing on my machine. It's the more gray zone stuff for which Stop Badware was originally founded, stopbadware.org, where we thought, boy, lawyers have a role here because there's some software like the Jessica Simpson screensaver, apologies if the authors of this screensaver are attending the conference, that's like, it is a Jessica Simpson screensaver. I give it that. Like, you run it and like, there are pictures of Jessica Simpson. On the other hand, it slurps everything off your machine as a form of spyware, and I think it kind of discloses that in the fine print. So then you're just like, well, pictures of Jessica Simpson, slurps all my data, pictures of Jessica Simpson, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, Norton has to be careful with that in a way that it doesn't have to be careful for something that is just exploiting a security vulnerability. And part of our hypothesis is the problem of bad code is less about whose operating system is more vulnerable to a backdoor attack, and more whose brain is more vulnerable to a front door attack, where when you clicked OK to run that ActiveX control, you thought you weren't loaded, but then it turns out that there was a problem of some kind. And we're hoping that that's the uncanny valley that we're after between really good code and obviously bad code. That's the base that isn't covered. Other thoughts or reactions? Yeah, Scott.
There have been numerous attempts at gathering data over the internet and through browsers for now since browsers have
been
since 1995. Alexa, who have you networked with and how are
you? Many have sought the Holy Grail. Their bones litter the landscape. What makes you think you'll be able to take a sip? I'm not sure that was your question. I was thinking Indiana Jones just is about to be released. So it's a product placement offered by Disney. Or Lucasfilm, I guess. Lucasfilm is here. A nice guy from Lucasfilm. I don't know if he's here right now, but really nice guy. We're doing some networking. My worry is we're not doing enough, but sometimes you can do so much that you never quite get started, and Bob Frankston seems to have a thought on exactly this front.
How does this differ from the from what you do in the voting booth?
From what you do in the voting booth?
Yes, there's a virus going out in Washington.
This seems so profound, I'm not sure I get it.
The same kind of questions of is this decision good or bad?
Yes.
It's not just running software.
Yes.
It's a very general.
I see what you mean. Yeah, so it plugs into literatures by people as diverse as Cass Sunstein and James Surowiecki, and how do we possibly use a netizenship model? In fact, wasn't that what the First Amendment was for? So we can actually have a conversation about stuff and end up better off than the self-appointed philosopher king experts at coming to resolution. And in that sense, yes, I think netizenship, as kind of trite as a word as it may sound, is meant to relate to that fine tradition and say, especially to the non-experts, I feel like that's often a lingering question when I talk about distributed solutions to problems. People are like, well, it's all well and good, the nerds can help, but, you know, I am but a simple grandmother that only knows how to operate my iPhone. What can I do? And I think there the answer is, there's plenty you can do. If you can play solitaire, ma'am, you can, you know. And it even reminds me, just pre-associating from your voting booth question, fantasycongress.org, is that what it's called? Some of the political types here may have visited that. And this is like, get to know your members of Congress, because then you'll win points in a game with your friends as you put up rosters like a fantasy football or fantasy baseball team, and like you have eighth graders able to rattle off exactly the status of the farm bill because it's totally relevant to whether they're gonna win. And yeah, I would love to harness that kind of spirit. Other thoughts, including from our own team or questions our team wants to put to the distributed masses? Elizabeth?
Well, there was actually a question from the question tool.
A question from the question tool.
About netizenship. And this is a great tool, but don't you think that the area of netizenship is much larger and more dimensional?
More dimensional.
And maybe also how you can fit.
Why is David I asking that question?
This project into the broader picture.
Yeah.
An idea behind netizenship.
Yeah. I am certainly seeing linkage with the work that Terry's doing on semiotic democracy, the work that Yochai is doing on sharing nicely, which I take Yochai, I hesitate to speak for or about Yochai with him in the room, although it's not like I would say anything terrible if you weren't in the room. I'm just going to keep on digging here. But the work that Yochai is doing on sharing nicely, on actually asking ourselves as we enter, depending on where you measure the starting point, maybe it's 1972, the era of the mainframe and the kind of, you know, dystopian Clockwork Orange kind of stuff. Maybe it's 1977 from the introduction of the PC. Maybe it's 1992 or 4 from the web. But as we enter an era in which we feel simultaneously so empowered, you can find out so much stuff right now just from your seat, and so alienated, so feeling like just a mote of dust floating on the wind kind of thing, not in a good Firefly kind of way. That's our project, how to actually make it so that when you're not working, or maybe even when you are, what you're doing is feeling like you're connecting with other people and doing something meaningful and fulfilling. And I agree that this project is meant to tap into that chord, to resonate with it, as one of many projects all of us have been thinking about. I mean, it's what Global Voices is about. It's, you know, so much of what we've been doing is how to do something more than solitaire or more than Grand Theft Auto, although for those of you who like it, I imagine there are great social networking. Do social network in Grand Theft Auto 4, have they added that feature where you can band together with other thugs? And I don't know. And I'm even interested in the dark side of everybody getting together and singing Kumbaya, such as this service that Elizabeth introduced me to called Oink. Oink.me.uk.
Oink is, how she came up with that.
Oink is
oink.cd and then shut down.
Yes. Oink was the cutest pirate rip-off all the music you can community ever. And it was like totally functional. It had this community spirit. It was like this barn-raising. We want a clean copy of every piece of music ever released. Exactly one. Perfectly indexed, perfectly meta-tagged, and so available BitTorrent-wise that when you click on it, 5 seconds later, you have the album. And it was an extraordinary community of felons.
Now, it's copyright infringement.
It's now down, but it was up for a long time. And now, Elizabeth's like,
that are like essentially the same.
Elizabeth's like, it's just copyright infringement. Yeah.
It wouldn't be criminal copyright.
But I actually think that this, I mean, I would love, this gets back to the original question to JP on gaming it or hacking it, how do we react to that? In some ways, I would see it as a measure of success if our biggest enemies are communities of people united in a friendly and open spirit towards a goal that we find terrible. Like, I'd rather have that as the enemy, and this is just instinct more than it is, you know, anything else, than somebody who just sent the FBI off to file another warrant electronically so that they can listen in on your OnStar system where you're driving around. I mean, as between those two things, and people I think will differ on this, which is why I raise it. I know reasonable people will disagree as to where the greatest threat comes from, but the organizing potential of the net, if it carries with it the possibility of dialectic, of discussion, to me that is inherently, you know, that's enough enlightenment and, you know, it's the best system we have for getting to places that we think the human condition ought to be. Wow, you guys wanted really to go meta. I think we managed that. One last thing back here, yeah?
Greg Allen from Sunlight Foundation. I think some of this begs the question of, have you considered doing it in the context of the classroom or in the context of the organization? We're all obviously going through one or two access, you know, wireless access points at this moment. And it would be certainly possible to measure how much different types of traffic is coming on, people doing email, and actually give to teachers or other people aggregate data of when people are paying attention and when they're not.
And then in terms of an organization, you know, is this a good day at my organization?
What could possibly go wrong with that?
No student.
But is this a good day? I'm thinking of the, you know, what mood am I in today as I'm at work? And kind of just what is going on with my colleagues at work?
Yeah. Twitter is getting us there.
Well, I mean, that's the infrastructure.
Right.
Exactly.
And I actually just finished up a draft of a paper that actually talks about human sensor networks and generally finds myself like scared about them. But the idea that you could actually see that there might be a riot shaping up at City Hall because there's a lot of fast pulses and, you know, angry people in Sector 4G. But back to your other question, which is more prosaic of, would one vector of getting this out and starting to get data points be institutional rather than individual? I think so. It's the kind of thing Terry did with Noonk and Paul Hoffert, who's here, thinking that cutting one deal with a number of major universities, for example, might be a nice way to get a system that requires buying and going rather than trying to get it one creator and one consumer at a time. My own sense is a little bit of, I guess I'd be happy to pursue them all simultaneously. In my experience, when you do try to go institutionally, there's a lot of fear, it's change, it's different, what's in it for us? People are already playing the role of having to safeguard their institution. We might be able to make a case to them that this is fun and worthy of doing, a couple .orgs might sign on. I had one conversation, for example, with Martin Versovsky, who runs phone.com, where you get a little access point, and with it, you allow others to sign on. They either pay, in which case you get a cut from your own access, or it's because when you are on the road, others that have Phonero access points, you can then get for free, so it's a big exchange of access points. And one thought would be, why not just have one part of the phone router be to run these tests as it goes? And yeah, that could be one way of transforming from nobody using it to lots of people using it. So I'd look into it. I would just also love to maintain the individualistic notion of having people make individual decisions that they want to have a more multifaceted experience with this technology that for 40 years has invited it versus the technology that does not. So, all right, I guess we are at time. We'd love to have more comments and thoughts on this informally or otherwise as we go. Mia and Sally, yep?
Well, you just forgot the part about that it will be a screensaver, so it will be the kind of thing that people...
Oh, it'll also be a screensaver so that...
you and see it and download it.
That's a good point, too.
That community aspect.
Where'd you get that cool screensaver with graphs and charts? Like, just go to flockdict.org. That name again? Yes, right, exactly. Sally? That would be great.
Continue the conversation, add notes and questions.
That would be great. And we're also really trying to do it internationally. We brought in the Oxford Internet Institute. It would be great to have others involved in contributing to the project. Sorry, Vandana. Oh, and you can sign up on this page as well at herdict.org.
We took away the grass.
So, with your email address.
We took away the grass.
We took away the grass, she says. Thank you so much. There was some grass on the page before, and I was like, I don't know if I like the grass. Would Google put grass on a page? I don't think so. But sorry, Mia, the grass was nice. It seemed overgrown. It's like, where are the sheep? But we'll put this offline. Thank you all so much. It's been a really helpful session. Thank you.